Chapter 21 Continued. Harry swallowed his mouthful of chocolate with great difficulty and got up again. "Professor Dumbledore, Sirius Black, for heaven's sake," said Madame Pomfrey hysterically, "is this a hospital wing or not? Headmaster, I must insist—" "My apologies, Poppy, but I need a word with Mr. Potter and Miss Granger," said Dumbledore calmly. "I've just been talking to Sirius Black." "I suppose he's told you the same fairy tale he's planted in Potter's mind," spat Snape, "something about a rat and Pettigrew being alive." "That indeed is Black's story," said Dumbledore, surveying Snape closely through his half-moon spectacles.
"And does my evidence count for nothing?" snarled Snape. "Peter Pettigrew was not in the Shrieking Shack, nor did I see any sign of him in the grounds."
"That was because you were knocked out, Professor," said Hermione earnestly. "You didn't arrive in time to hear—"
"Miss Granger, hold your tongue!"
"Now, Snape," said Fudge, startled, "the young lady is disturbed in her mind. We must make allowances."
"I would like to speak to Harry and Hermione alone," said Dumbledore abruptly. "Cornelius, Severus, Poppy, please leave us."
"Headmaster!" spluttered Madame Pomfrey. "They need treatment. They need rest."
"This cannot wait," said Dumbledore. "I must insist." Madame Pomfrey pursed her lips and strode away into her office at the end of the ward, slamming the door behind her. Fudge consulted the large gold pocket watch dangling from his waistcoat.
"The Dementors should have arrived by now," he said. "I'll go and meet them. Dumbledore, I'll see you upstairs."
He crossed to the door and held it open for Snape, but Snape hadn't moved.
"You surely don't believe a word of Black's story," Snape whispered, his eyes fixed on Dumbledore's face.
"I wish to speak to Harry and Hermione alone," Dumbledore repeated. Snape took a step towards Dumbledore.
"Sirius Black showed he was capable of murder at the age of 16, he breathed. "You haven't forgotten that, Headmaster. You haven't forgotten that he once tried to kill me."
"My memory is as good as it ever was, Severus," said Dumbledore quietly. Snape turned on his heel and marched through the door Fudge was still holding. It closed behind them, and Dumbledore turned to Harry and Hermione. They both burst into speech at the same time.
"Professor, Black's telling the truth. We saw Pettigrew. He escaped when Professor Lupin turned into a werewolf. He's a rat. Pettigrew's front paw, I mean finger, he cut it off. Pettigrew attacked Ron. It wasn't Sirius."
But Dumbledore held up his hand to stem the flood of explanations. "It is your turn to listen, and I beg you will not interrupt me, because there is very little time," he said quietly. "There is not a shred of proof to support Black's story, except your word, and the word of 2 13-year-old wizards will not convince anybody. A street full of eyewitnesses swore they saw Sirius murder Pettigrew. I myself gave evidence to the Ministry that Sirius had been the Potter's secret keeper."
"Professor Lupin can tell you—" Harry said, unable to stop himself.
"Professor Lupin is currently deep in the forest, unable to tell anyone anything. By the time he is human again, it will be too late. Sirius will be worse than dead. I might add that werewolves are so mistrusted by most of our kind that his support will count for very little, and the fact that he and Sirius are old friends—"
"But listen to me, Harry. It is too late. You understand me? You must see that Professor Snape's version of events is far more convincing than yours."
"He hates Sirius," Hermione said desperately, "all because of some stupid trick Sirius played on him."
"Sirius has not acted like an innocent man. The attack on the fat lady, entering Gryffindor Tower with a knife. Without Pettigrew, alive or dead, we have no chance of overturning Sirius' sentence."
"But you believe us?"
"Yes, I do," said Dumbledore quietly. "But I have no power to make other men see the truth, or to overrule the Minister for Magic." Harry stared up into the grave face, and felt as though the ground beneath him were falling sharply away. He had grown used to the idea that Dumbledore could solve anything, he had expected Dumbledore to pull some amazing solution out of the air. But no, their last hope was gone. "What we need," said Dumbledore slowly, and his light blue eyes moved from Harry to Hermione, "is more time." "But," Hermione began, and then her eyes became very round.
"Oh!"
"Now pay attention," said Dumbledore, speaking very low and very clearly. "Sirius is locked in Professor Flitwick's office on the 7th floor, 13th window from the right of the West Tower. If all goes well, you will be able to save more than one innocent life tonight. But remember this, both of you. You must not be seen. Miss Granger, you know the law. You know what is at stake. You must not be seen."
Harry didn't have a clue what was going on. Dumbledore had turned on his heel and looked back as he reached the door.
"I am going to lock you in. It is," he consulted his watch, 5 minutes to midnight. "Miss Granger, 3 turns should do it. Good luck."
"Good luck," Harry repeated, as the door closed behind Dumbledore. 3 turns? What's he talking about? What are we supposed to do?"
But Hermione was fumbling with the neck of her robes, pulling from beneath them a very long, very fine gold chain.
"Harry, come here," she said urgently. "Quick!"
Harry moved towards her, completely bewildered. She was holding the chain out. He saw a tiny, sparkling hourglass hanging from it.
"Here!"
She had thrown the chain around his neck, too.
"Ready?"
she said breathlessly.
"What are we doing?" Harry said, completely lost.
Hermione turned the hourglass over 3 times. The dark ward dissolved. Harry had the sensation that he was flying very fast, backwards. A blur of colours and shapes rushed past him. His ears were pounding. He tried to yell, but couldn't hear his own voice. And then he felt solid ground beneath his feet, and everything came into focus again. He was standing next to Hermione in the deserted entrance hall, and a stream of golden sunlight was falling across the paved floor from the open front doors. He looked wildly around at Hermione, the chain of the hourglass cutting into his neck.
"Hermione, what in here?"
Hermione seized Harry's arm and dragged him across the hall to the door of a broom cupboard. She opened it, pushed him inside amongst the buckets and mops, followed him in, then slammed the door behind them.
"What? How? Hermione, what happened?" "We've gone back in time," Hermione whispered, lifting the chain off Harry's neck in the darkness. 3 hours back."
Harry found his own leg and gave it a very hard pinch. It hurt a lot, which seemed to rule out the possibility that he was having a very bizarre dream.
"But, shh, listen, someone's coming. I think it might be us."
Hermione had her ear pressed against the cupboard door.
"Footsteps across the hall? Yes, I think it's us going down to Hagrid's." "Are you telling me," Harry whispered, "that we're here in this cupboard and we're out there too?"
"Yes," said Hermione, her ear still glued to the cupboard door.
"I'm sure it's us. It doesn't sound like more than 3 people, and we're walking slowly because we're under the invisibility cloak."
She broke off, still listening intently.
"We've gone down the front steps."
Hermione sat down on an upturned bucket, looking desperately anxious. Harry wanted a few questions answered.
"Where did you get that hourglass thing?"
"It's called a time-turner," Hermione whispered, "and I got it from Professor McGonagall on our first day back. I've been using it all year to get to all my lessons. Professor McGonagall made me swear I wouldn't tell anyone. She had to write all sorts of letters to the Ministry of Magic so I could have one. She had to tell them that I was a model student and that I'd never, ever use it for anything except my studies. I've been turning it back so I could do ours over again. That's how I've been doing several lessons at once, see? But, Harry, I don't understand what Dumbledore wants us to do. Why did he tell us to go back 3 hours? How's that going to help Sirius?"
Harry stared at her shadowy face.
"There must be something that happened around now he wants us to change," he said slowly. "What happened?
We were walking down to Hagrid's 3 hours ago. This is 3 hours ago, and we are walking down to Hagrid's, said Hermione. We just heard ourselves leaving. Harry frowned. He felt as though he was screwing up his whole brain in concentration. Dumbledore just said we could save more than one innocent life. And then it hit him. Hermione, we're going to save Buckbeak.
But how will that help Sirius?
Dumbledore said. He just told us where the window is, the window of Flitwick's office, where they've got Sirius locked up. We've got to fly Buckbeak up to the window and rescue Sirius. Sirius can escape on Buckbeak. They can escape together. From what Harry could see of Hermione's face, she looked terrified.
If we manage that without being seen, it'll be a miracle.
Well, we've got to try, haven't we? Said Harry. He stood up and pressed his own ear against the door. Doesn't sound like anyone's there. Come on, let's go. Harry pushed the cupboard door open. The entrance hall was deserted. As quietly and quickly as they could, they darted out of the cupboard and down the stone steps. The shadows were already lengthening, the tops of the trees in the Forbidden Forest gilded once more with gold.
"If anyone's looking out of the window,"
Hermione squeaked, looking up at the castle behind them. "We'll run for it," said Harry determinedly. "Straight into the forest, all right? We'll have to hide behind a tree or something and keep a lookout."
"Okay, but we'll go round by the greenhouses," said Hermione breathlessly. "We need to keep out of sight of Hagrid's front door, or we'll see us. We must be nearly at Hagrid's by now."
Still working out what she meant, Harry set off at a sprint, Hermione behind him. They tore across the vegetable gardens to the greenhouses, paused for a moment behind them, then set off again, fast as they could, skirting around the Whomping Willow, tearing towards the shelter of the forest. Safe in the shadows of the trees, Harry turned around. Seconds later, Hermione arrived beside him, panting.
"Right," she gasped. "We need to sneak over to Hagrid's. Keep out of sight, Harry."
They made their way silently through the trees, keeping to the very edge of the forest. Then, as they glimpsed the front of Hagrid's house, they heard a knock upon his door. They moved quickly behind a wide oak trunk and peered out from either side. Hagrid had appeared in his doorway, shaking and white, looking around to see who had knocked, and Harry heard his own voice.
"It's us. We're wearing the invisibility cloak. Let us in, and we can take it off."
"You shouldn't have come," Hagrid whispered. He stood back, then shut the door quickly. "This is the weirdest thing we've ever done," Harry said fervently.
"Let's move along a bit," Hermione whispered. "We need to get nearer to Buckbeak."
They crept through the trees until they saw the nervous hippogriff tethered to the fence around Hagrid's pumpkin patch.
"Now?" Harry whispered.
"No," said Hermione. "If we steal him now, those committee people will think Hagrid set him free. We've got to wait until they've seen he's tied outside." "That's going to give us about 60 seconds," said Harry. This was starting to seem impossible. At that moment, there was a crash of breaking china from inside Hagrid's cabin.
"That's Hagrid breaking the milk jug," Hermione whispered. "I'm going to find Scabbers in a moment."
Sure enough, a few minutes later, they heard Hermione's shriek of surprise.
"Hermione," said Harry suddenly, "what if we just run in there and grab Pettigrew?"
"No," said Hermione in a terrified whisper.
"Don't you understand? We're breaking one of the most important wizarding laws. Nobody's supposed to change time. Nobody. You heard Dumbledore. If we're seen,
we'd only be seen by ourselves and Hagrid."
"Harry, what do you think you'd do if you saw yourself bursting into Hagrid's house?" said Hermione.
I'd think I'd gone mad," said Harry, "or I'd think there was some dark magic going on."
"Exactly. You wouldn't understand. You might even attack yourself, don't you see? Professor McGonagall told me what awful things have happened when wizards have meddled with time. Loads of them ended up killing their past or future selves by mistake."
"Okay," said Harry. "It was just an idea. I just thought..." But Hermione nudged him and pointed towards the castle. Harry moved his head a few inches to get a clear view of the distant front doors. Dumbledore, Fudge, the old committee member, and McNair the executioner were coming down the steps.
"We're about to come out,"
Hermione breathed. And sure enough, Moments later, Hagrid's back door opened, and Harry saw himself, Ron and Hermione walking out of it with Hagrid. It was, without a doubt, the strangest sensation of his life, standing behind the tree and watching himself in the pumpkin patch.
"It's okay, Beaky, it's okay,"
Hagrid said to Buckbeak. Then he turned to Harry, Ron and Hermione.
"Go on, get going."
"Hagrid, we can't. We'll tell them what really happened. They can't kill him.
Go. It's bad enough without you lot in trouble and all."
Harry watched the Hermione in the pumpkin patch throw the invisibility cloak over himself and Ron.
"Go, quick. Don't listen."
There was a knock on Hagrid's front door. The execution party had arrived. Hagrid turned around and headed back into his cabin, leaving the back door ajar. Harry watched the grass flatten in patches all around the cabin and heard three pairs of feet retreating. He, Ron and Hermione had gone, but the Harry and Hermione hidden in the trees could now hear what was happening inside the cabin through the back door.
"Where is the beast?" came the cold voice of McNair.
"Outside,"
Hagrid croaked. Harry pulled his head out of sight as McNair's face appeared at Hagrid's window, staring out at Buckbeak. Then they heard Fudge.
"We have to read you the official notice of execution, Hagrid. I'll make it quick. And then you and McNair need to sign it. McNair, you're supposed to listen too. That's procedure."
McNair's face vanished from the window. It was now or never.
"Wait here,"
Harry whispered to Hermione.
"I'll do it."
As Fudge's voice started again, Harry darted out from behind his tree, vaulted the fence into the pumpkin patch, and approached Buckbeak.
"It is the decision of the Committee for the Disposal of Dangerous Creatures that the hippogriff Buckbeak, hereafter called the Condemned, shall be executed on the 6th of June at sundown."
Careful not to blink, Harry stared up into Buckbeak's fierce orange eye once more and bowed. Buckbeak sank to his scaly knees and then stood up again. Harry began to fumble with the rope, tying Buckbeak to the fence.
"Sentence to execution by beheading, to be carried out by the committee's appointed executioner, Walden McNair."
"Come on, Buckbeak," Harry murmured. "Come on, we're going to help you. Quietly, quietly."
"As witnessed below, Hagrid, you sign here."
Harry threw all his weight onto the rope, but Buckbeak had dug in his front feet.
"Well, let's get this over with," said the reedy voice of the committee member from inside Hagrid's cabin. "Hagrid, perhaps it would be better if you stayed inside."
"No, I want to be with him. I don't want him to be alone."
Footsteps echoed from within the cabin.
"Buckbeak, move!" Harry hissed.
Harry tugged harder on the rope around Buckbeak's neck. The hippogriff began to walk, rustling its wings irritably. They were still 10 feet away from the forest, in plain view of Hagrid's back door.
"One moment, please, McNair," came Dumbledore's voice. "You need to sign too."
The footsteps stopped. Harry heaved on the rope. Buckbeak snapped his beak and walked a little faster. Hermione's white face was sticking out from behind a tree.
"Hurry, hurry,"
she mouthed. Harry could still hear Dumbledore's voice talking from within the cabin. He gave the rope another wrench. Buckbeak broke into a grudging trot. They had reached the trees.
"Quick, quick!"
Hermione moaned, darting out from behind her tree, seizing the rope too, and adding her weight to make Buckbeak move faster. Harry looked over his shoulder. They were now blocked from sight. They couldn't see Hagrid's garden at all.
"Stop,"
he whispered to Hermione.
"They might hear us."
Hagrid's back door had opened with a bang. Harry, Hermione, and Buckbeak stood quite still. Even the hippogriff seemed to be listening intently. Silence. Then,
"Where is it?"
said the reedy voice of the committee member.
"Where is the beast?"
"It was tied here,"
said the executioner furiously.
"I saw it, just here."
"How extraordinary," said Dumbledore. There was a note of amusement in his voice.
"Beaky,"
said Hagrid huskily. There was a swishing noise and the thud of an axe. The executioner seemed to have swung it into the fence in anger. And then came the howling, and this time they could hear Hagrid's words through his sobs.
"Gone! Gone! Bless his little beak, he's gone! Must have pulled himself free! Beaky, you clever boy!"
Buckbeak started to strain against the rope, trying to get back to Hagrid. Harry and Hermione tightened their grip and dug their heels into the forest floor to stop him.
"Someone untied him!" the executioner was snarling. "We should search the grounds, the forest!"
"McNair, if Buckbeak has indeed been stolen, do you really think the thief will have led him away on foot?" said Dumbledore, still sounding amused. "Search the skies, if you will. Hagrid, I could do with a cup of tea or a large brandy."
"Of course, Professor," said Hagrid, who sounded weak with happiness. "Come in, come in!"
Harry and Hermione listened closely. They heard footsteps, the soft cursing of the executioner, the snap of the door, and then silence once more.
"Now what?" whispered Harry, looking around. "We'll have to hide in here," said Hermione, who looked very shaken. "We need to wait until they've gone back to the castle. Then we wait until it's safe to fly Buckbeak up to Sirius's window. He won't be there for another couple of hours. Oh, this is going to be difficult."
She looked nervously over her shoulder into the depths of the forest. The sun was setting now.
"We're going to have to move," said Harry, thinking hard. "We've got to be able to see the Whomping Willow, or we won't know what's going on."
"Okay," said Hermione, getting a firmer grip on Buckbeak's rope. "But we've got to keep out of sight, Harry, remember." They moved around the edge of the forest, darkness falling thickly around them, until they were hidden behind a clump of trees through which they could make out the willow.
"There's Ron!" said Harry, suddenly.
A dark figure was sprinting across the lawn, and its shout echoed through the still night air.
"Get away from him! Get away! Scabbers, come here!"
And then they saw two more figures materialize out of nowhere. Harry watched himself and Hermione chasing after Ron. Then he saw Ron dive.
"Gotcha! Get off, you stinking cat!"
"There's Sirius," said Harry.
The great shape of the dog had bounded out from the roots of the willow. They saw him bowl Harry over, then seize Ron.
"Looks even worse from here, doesn't it?"
said Harry, watching the dog pulling Ron into the roots.
"Ouch! Look, I just got walloped by the tree, and so did you. This is weird!"
The Whomping Willow was creaking and lashing out with its lower branches. They could see themselves darting here and there, trying to reach the trunk. And then the tree froze.
"That was Crookshanks pressing the knot," said Hermione.
"And there we go," Harry muttered. "We're in." The moment they disappeared, the tree began to move again. Seconds later, they heard footsteps quite close by. Dumbledore, McNair, Fudge, and the old committee member were making their way up to the castle.
"Right after we'd gone down into the passage," said Hermione, "if only Dumbledore had come with us."
"McNair and Fudge would have come too," said Harry bitterly. "I bet you anything Fudge would have told McNair to murder Sirius on the spot." They watched the four men climb the castle steps and disappear from view. For a few minutes the scene was deserted. Then...
"Here comes Lupin," said Harry, as they saw another figure sprinting down the stone steps and hurrying towards the willow.
Harry looked up at the sky. Clouds were obscuring the moon completely. They watched Lupin seize a broken branch from the ground and prod the knot on the trunk. The tree stopped fighting, and Lupin, too, disappeared into the gap in its roots.
"If he had only grabbed the cloak," said Harry, "it's just lying there."
He turned to Hermione.
"If I just dashed out now and grabbed it, Snape would never be able to get it, and, Harry, we mustn't be seen!"
"How can you stand this?" he asked Hermione fiercely. "Just standing there and watching it happen!" He hesitated.
"I'm going to grab the cloak.
Harry, no!" Hermione seized the back of Harry's robes not a moment too soon. Just then they heard a burst of song. It was Hagrid making his way up to the castle, singing at the top of his voice and weaving slightly as he walked. A large bottle was swinging from his hands.
"See," Hermione whispered, "see what would have happened? We've got to keep out of sight. No, Buckbeak!"
The Hippogriff was making frantic attempts to get to Hagrid again. Harry seized his rope too, straining to hold Buckbeak back. They watched Hagrid meander tipsily up to the castle. He was gone. Buckbeak stopped fighting to get away. His head drooped sadly. Barely 2 minutes later, the castle doors flew open yet again, and Snape had come charging out of them, running towards the willow. Harry's fists clenched as they watched Snape skid to a halt next to the tree, looking around. He grabbed the cloak and held it up. "Get your filthy hands off it," Harry snarled under his breath. "Shh!" Snape seized the branch Lupin had used to freeze the tree, prodded the knot, and vanished from view as he put on the cloak. "So that's it," said Hermione quietly. "We're all down there, and now we've just got to wait until we come back up again." She took the end of Buckbeak's rope and tied it securely around the nearest tree, then sat down on the dry ground, arms around her knees.
"Harry, there's something I don't understand. Why didn't the Dementors get Sirius? I remember them coming, and then I think I passed out. There were so many of them."
Harry sat down too. He explained what he had seen, how, as the nearest Dementor had lowered its mouth to Harry's, a large silver something had come galloping across the lake and forced the Dementors to retreat. Hermione's mouth was slightly open by the time Harry had finished.
"But what was it?"
"There's only one thing it could have been to make the Dementors go," said Harry. "A real Patronus, a powerful one."
"But who conjured it?"
Harry didn't say anything. He was thinking back to the person he had seen on the other bank of the lake. He knew who he thought it had been, but how could it have been?
"Didn't you see what they looked like?" said Hermione eagerly. "Was it one of the teachers?"
"No," said Harry. "He wasn't a teacher.
But it must have been a really powerful wizard to drive all those Dementors away. If the Patronus was shining so brightly, didn't it light him up? Couldn't you see?"
"Yeah, I saw him," said Harry slowly. "But maybe I imagined it. I wasn't thinking straight. I passed out right afterwards."
"Who do you think it was?"
"I think..." Harry swallowed, knowing how strange this was going to sound. "I think it was my dad." Harry glanced up at Hermione and saw that her mouth was fully open now. She was gazing at him with a mixture of alarm and pity.
"Harry, your dad's, well, dead," she said quietly.
"I know that," said Harry quickly.
"You think you saw his ghost?"
"I don't know. No, he looked solid. But then... maybe I was seeing things," said Harry. "But from what I could see, it looked like him. I've got photos of him." Hermione was still looking at him as though worried about his sanity. "I know it sounds mad," said Harry flatly. He turned to look at Buckbeak, who was digging his beak into the ground, apparently searching for worms. But he wasn't really watching Buckbeak. He was thinking about his father and about his three oldest friends, Moony, Wormtail, Padfoot and Prongs. Had all four of them been out in the grounds tonight? Wormtail had reappeared this evening when everyone had thought he was dead. Was it so impossible his father had done the same? Had he been seeing things across the lake? The figure had been too far away to see distinctly, yet he had felt sure for a moment before he had lost consciousness. The leaves overhead rustled faintly in the breeze. The moon drifted in and out of sight behind the shifting clouds. Hermione sat with her face turned towards the willow, waiting. And then, at last, after over an hour,
"Here we come,"
Hermione whispered. She and Harry got to their feet. Buckbeak raised his head. They saw Lupin, Ron and Pettigrew clambering awkwardly out of the hole in the roots. Then came Hermione. Then the unconscious Snape drifting weirdly upwards. Next came Harry and Black. They all began to walk towards the castle. Harry's heart was starting to beat very fast. He glanced up at the sky. Any moment now, that cloud was going to move aside and show the moon.
"Harry,"
Hermione muttered, as though she knew exactly what he was thinking, "we've got to stay put. We mustn't be seen. There's nothing we can do." "So we're just going to let Pettigrew escape all over again," said Harry quietly.
"How do you expect to find a rat in the dark?" snapped Hermione. "There's nothing we can do.
We came back to help Sirius. We're not supposed to be doing anything else. All right. The moon slid out from behind its cloud. They saw the tiny figures across the grounds stop. Then they saw movement.
There goes Lupin,
Hermione whispered.
He's transforming.
Hermione, said Harry suddenly, we've got to move.
We mustn't, I keep telling you. Not to interfere, but Lupin's going to run into the forest right at us.
Hermione gasped.
Quick, she moaned, dashing to untie Buckbeak. Quick, where are we going to go? Where are we going to hide? The Dementors will be coming any moment.
Back to Hagrid's, Harry said. It's empty now. Come on. They ran, fast as they could, Buckbeak cantering along behind them. They could hear the werewolf howling behind them. The cabin was in sight. Harry skidded to the door, wrenched it open, and Hermione and Buckbeak flashed past him. Harry threw himself in after them and bolted the door. Fang, the boarhound, barked loudly.
"Shh, Fang, it's us," said Hermione, hurrying over and scratching his ears to quieten him. "That was really close," she said to Harry.
"Yeah." Harry was looking out of the window. It was much harder to see what was going on from here. Buckbeak seemed very happy to find himself back inside Hagrid's house. He lay down in front of the fire, folded his wings contentedly, and seemed ready for a good nap.
"I think I'd better go outside again, you know," said Harry slowly. "I can't see what's going on. We won't know when it's time."
Hermione looked up. Her expression was suspicious.
"I'm not going to try and interfere," said Harry quickly. "But if we don't see what's going on, how are we going to know when it's time to rescue Sirius?" "Well, OK, then. I'll wait here with Buckbeak. But, Harry, be careful. There's a werewolf out there. And the Dementors."
Harry stepped outside again and edged around the cabin. He could hear yelping in the distance. That meant the Dementors were closing in on Sirius. He and Hermione would be running to him any moment. Harry stared out towards the lake, his heart doing a kind of drum roll in his chest. Whoever had sent that Patronus would be appearing at any moment. For a fraction of a second he stood irresolute in front of Hagrid's door. You must not be seen. But he didn't want to be seen. He wanted to do the seeing. He had to know. And there were the Dementors. They were emerging out of the darkness from every direction, gliding around the edges of the lake. They were moving away from where Harry stood to the opposite bank. He wouldn't have to get near them. Harry began to run. He had no thought in his head except his father. If it was him, if it really was him, he had to know, had to find out. The lake was coming nearer and nearer, but there was no sign of anybody. On the opposite bank he could see tiny glimmers of silver, his own attempts at a Patronus. There was a bush at the very edge of the water. Harry threw himself behind it, peering desperately through the leaves. On the opposite bank the glimmers of silver were suddenly extinguished. A terrified excitement shot through him. Any moment now. "Come on," he muttered, staring about. "Where are you? Dad, come on." But no one came. Harry raised his head to look at the circle of Dementors across the lake. One of them was lowering its hood. It was time for the rescuer to appear, but no one was coming to help this time. And then it hit him. He understood. He hadn't seen his father. He had seen himself. Harry flung himself out from behind the bush and pulled out his wand. "Expecto Patronum!" he yelled. And out of the end of his wand burst, not a shapeless cloud of mist, but a blinding, dazzling, silver animal. He screwed up his eyes, trying to see what it was. It looked like a horse. It was galloping silently away from him across the black surface of the lake. He saw it lower its head and charge at the swarming Dementors. Now it was galloping around and around the black shapes on the ground, and the Dementors were falling back, scattering, retreating into the darkness. They were gone. The Patronus turned. It was cantering back towards Harry across the still surface of the water. It wasn't a horse. It wasn't a unicorn either. It was a stag. It was shining brightly as the moon above.
It was coming back to him. It stopped on the bank. Its hooves made no mark on the soft ground as it stared at Harry with its large silver eyes. Slowly, it bowed its antlered head, and Harry realized. "Prongs," he whispered. But as his trembling fingertips stretched towards the creature, it vanished. Harry stood there, hand still outstretched. Then, with a great leap of his heart, he heard hooves behind him. He whirled around and saw Hermione dashing towards him, dragging Buckbeak behind her.
"What did you do?" she said fiercely. "You said you were only going to keep a lookout."
"I just saved all our lives," said Harry. "Get behind here, behind this bush. I'll explain." Hermione listened to what had just happened with her mouth open yet again.
"Did anyone see you?"
"Yes, haven't you been listening? I saw me, but I thought I was my dad. It's okay."
"Harry, I can't believe it. You conjured up a Patronus that drove away all those Dementors. That's very, very advanced magic."
"I knew I could do it this time," said Harry, "because I'd already done it. Does that make sense?"
"I don't know. Harry, look at Snape."
Together they peered around the bush at the other bank. Snape had regained consciousness. He was conjuring stretchers and lifting the limp forms of Harry, Hermione, and Black onto them. A fourth stretcher, no doubt bearing Ron, was already floating at his side. Then, wand held out in front of him, he moved them away towards the castle.
"Right, it's nearly time," said Hermione tensely, looking at her watch. "We've got about 45 minutes until Dumbledore locks the door to the hospital wing. We've got to rescue Sirius and get back into the ward before anybody realizes we're missing."
They waited, watching the moving clouds reflected in the lake, while the bush next to them whispered in the breeze. Buckbeak, bored, was ferreting for worms again.
"Do you reckon he's up there yet?" said Harry, checking his watch.
He looked up at the castle and began counting the windows to the right of the west tower.
"Look," Hermione whispered. "Who's that? Someone's coming back out of the castle."
Harry stared through the darkness. The man was hurrying across the grounds towards one of the entrances. Something shiny glinted in his belt.
"McNair," said Harry, "the executioner. He's gone to get the Dementors. This is it, Hermione."
Hermione put her hands on Buckbeak's back, and Harry gave her a leg up. Then he placed his foot on one of the lower branches of the bush and climbed up in front of her. He pulled Buckbeak's rope back over his neck and tied it to the other side of his collar, like reins.
"Ready?"
he whispered to Hermione. "You better hold on to me." He nudged Buckbeak's sides with his heels. Buckbeak soared straight into the dark air. Harry gripped his flanks with his knees, feeling the great wings rising powerfully beneath them. Hermione was holding Harry very tightly around the waist. He could hear her muttering,
"Oh, no! I don't like this. Oh, I really don't like this."
Harry urged Buckbeak forwards. They were gliding quietly towards the upper floors of the castle. Harry pulled hard on the left-hand side of the rope, and Buckbeak turned. Harry was trying to count the windows flashing past.
"Whoa!"
he said, pulling backwards as hard as he could. Buckbeak slowed down, and they found themselves at a stop, unless you counted the fact that they kept rising up and down several feet as he beat his wings to remain airborne.
"He's there," Harry said, spotting Sirius as they rose up beside the window.
He reached out, and as Buckbeak's wings fell, was able to tap sharply on the glass. Black looked up. Harry saw his jaw drop. He leapt from his chair, hurried to the window, and tried to open it, but it was locked.
"Stand back!" Hermione called to him,
and she took out her wand, still gripping the back of Harry's robes with her left hand.
"Alohomora!"
The window sprang open.
How?
Said Black weakly, staring at the hippogriff.
"Get on! There's not much time," said Harry,
gripping Buckbeak firmly on either side of his sleek neck to hold him steady.
"You've got to get out of here. The Dementors are coming. McNair's gone to get them."
Black placed a hand on either side of the window frame and heaved his head and shoulders out of it. It was very lucky he was so thin. In seconds he had managed to fling one leg over Buckbeak's back and pull himself onto the hippogriff behind Hermione.
"Okay, Buckbeak, up!" said Harry, shaking the rope. "Up to the tower! Come on!"
The hippogriff gave one sweep of its mighty wings, and they were soaring upwards again, high as the top of the West Tower. Buckbeak landed with a clatter on the battlements, and Harry and Hermione slid off him at once.
"Sirius, you'd better go, quick!" Harry panted. "They'll reach Flitwick's office any moment. They'll find out you've gone."
Buckbeak pawed the ground, tossing his sharp head.
"What happened to the other boy, Ron?"
said Sirius urgently.
"He's going to be okay. He's still out of it, but Madame Pomfrey says she'll be able to make him better. Quick, go!"
But Black was still staring down at Harry.
"How can I ever thank—"
"Go!"
Harry and Hermione shouted together. Black wheeled Buckbeak around, facing the open sky.
"We'll see each other again," he said.
"You are truly your father's son, Harry."
He squeezed Buckbeak's sides with his heels. Harry and Hermione jumped back as the enormous wings rose once more. The hippogriff took off into the air. He and his rider became smaller and smaller as Harry gazed after them. Then a cloud drifted across the moon. They were gone.
Chapter 22. Owl Post Again.
"Harry!"
Hermione was tugging at his sleeve, staring at her watch.
"We've got exactly 10 minutes to get back down to the hospital wing without anybody seeing us before Dumbledore locks the door."
"Okay," said Harry, wrenching his gaze from the sky.
"Let's go."
They slipped through the doorway behind them and down a tightly spiralling stone staircase. As they reached the bottom of it, they heard voices. They flattened themselves against the wall and listened. It sounded like Fudge and Snape. They were walking quickly along the corridor at the foot of the staircase.
"Only hope Dumbledore's not going to make difficulties," Snape was saying. "The kiss will be performed immediately?"
"As soon as McNair returns with the Dementors. This whole Black affair has been highly embarrassing. I can't tell you how much I'm looking forward to informing the Daily Prophet that we've got him at last. I dare say they'll want to interview you, Snape. And once young Harry's back in his right mind, I expect he'll want to tell the Prophet exactly how you saved him."
Harry clenched his teeth. He caught a glimpse of Snape's smirk as he and Fudge passed Harry and Hermione's hiding place. Their footsteps died away. Harry and Hermione waited a few moments to make sure they'd really gone, then started to run in the opposite direction. Down one staircase, then another, along a new corridor. Then they heard a cackling ahead.
"Peeves!" Harry muttered, grabbing Hermione's wrist. "In here!"
They tore into a deserted classroom to their left, just in time. Peeves seemed to be bouncing along the corridor in tearing spirits, laughing his head off.
"Oh, he's horrible," whispered Hermione, her ear to the door. "I bet he's all excited because the Dementors are going to finish Sirius." She checked her watch. 3 minutes, Harry!"
They waited until Peeves's gloating voice had faded into the distance, then slid back out of the room and broke into a run again.
"Hermione, what'll happen if we don't get back inside before Dumbledore locks the door?" Harry panted. "I don't want to think about it," Hermione moaned, checking her watch again. 1 minute!
They had reached the end of the corridor with the hospital wing entrance.
"Okay, I can hear Dumbledore," said Hermione tensely. "Come on, Harry."
They crept along the corridor. The door opened. Dumbledore's back appeared.
"I'm going to lock you in," they heard him saying. "It is 5 minutes to midnight. Miss Granger, 3 turns should do it. Good luck."
Dumbledore backed out of the room, closed the door, and took out his wand to magically lock it. Panicking, Harry and Hermione ran forwards. Dumbledore looked up, and a wide smile appeared under the long silver moustache.
"Well?" he said quietly.
"We did it," said Harry breathlessly. "Sirius has gone, on Buckbeak."
Dumbledore beamed at them.
"Well done.
I think..." He listened intently for any sound within the hospital wing. "Yes, I think you've gone, too. Get inside.
I'll lock you in." Harry and Hermione slipped back inside the dormitory. It was empty except for Ron, who was still lying motionless in the end bed. As the lock clicked behind them, Harry and Hermione crept back to their own beds, Hermione tucking the time-turner back under her robes. Next moment, Madame Pomfrey had come striding back out of her office.
"Did I hear the headmaster leaving? Am I allowed to look after my patients now?"
She was in a very bad mood. Harry and Hermione thought it best to accept their chocolate quietly. Madame Pomfrey stood over them, making sure they ate it. But Harry could hardly swallow. He and Hermione were waiting, listening, their nerves jangling. And then, as they both took a fourth piece of chocolate from Madame Pomfrey, they heard a distant roar of fury echoing from somewhere above them.
"What was that?" said Madame Pomfrey in alarm.
Now they could hear angry voices growing louder and louder. Madame Pomfrey was staring at the door.
"Really, they'll wake everybody up. What do they think they're doing?"
Harry was trying to hear what the voices were saying. They were drawing nearer.
"He must have disapparated, Severus. We should have left somebody in the room with him. When this gets out—"
"He didn't disapparate!" Snape roared, now very close at hand. "You can't apparate or disapparate inside this castle. This has something to do with Potter!"
"Severus, be reasonable. Harry has been locked up."
Bam!
The door of the hospital wing burst open. Fudge, Snape, and Dumbledore came striding into the ward. Dumbledore alone looked calm. Indeed, he looked as though he was quite enjoying himself. Fudge appeared angry, but Snape was beside himself.
"Out with it, Potter!"
he bellowed.
"What did you do?"
"Professor Snape!" shrieked Madame Pomfrey. "Control yourself!"
"See here, Snape, be reasonable," said Fudge. "This door's been locked. We just saw—"
"They helped him escape, I know it!"
Snape howled, pointing at Harry and Hermione. His face was twisted. Spit was flying from his mouth.
"Calm down, man!" Fudge barked. "You're talking nonsense!"
"You don't know Potter!"
shrieked Snape.
"He did it! I know he did it!"
"That will do, Severus," said Dumbledore quietly. "Think about what you are saying. This door has been locked since I left the ward 10 minutes ago. Madame Pomfrey, have these students left their beds?"
"Of course not," said Madame Pomfrey, bristling. "I've been with them ever since you left."
"Well, there you have it, Severus," said Dumbledore calmly. "Unless you are suggesting that Harry and Hermione are able to be in two places at once, I'm afraid I don't see any point in troubling them further." Snape stood there, seething, staring from Fudge, who looked thoroughly shocked at his behaviour, to Dumbledore, whose eyes were twinkling behind his glasses. Snape whirled about, robes swishing behind him, and stormed out of the ward.
"Fellow seems quite unbalanced," said Fudge, staring after him. "I'd watch out for him if I were you, Dumbledore."
"Oh, he's not unbalanced," said Dumbledore quietly. "He's just suffered a severe disappointment."
"He's not the only one!" puffed Fudge. "The Daily Prophet's going to have a field day. We had Black cornered, and he slipped through our fingers yet again. All it needs now is for the story of that Hippogriff's escape to get out, and I'll be a laughing-stock. Well, I'd better go and notify the Ministry."
"And the Dementors?" said Dumbledore. "They'll be removed from the school, I trust."
"Oh, yes, they'll have to go," said Fudge, running his fingers distractedly through his hair. "Never dreamed they'd attempt to administer the kiss on an innocent boy. Completely out of control. No, I'll have them packed off back to Azkaban tonight. Perhaps we should think about dragons at the school entrance."
"Hagrid would like that," said Dumbledore, with a swift smile at Harry and Hermione. As he and Fudge left the dormitory, Madame Pomfrey hurried to the door and locked it again. Muttering angrily to herself, she headed back to her office. There was a low moan from the other end of the ward. Ron had woken up. They could see him sitting up, rubbing his head, looking around.
What happened?" he groaned. "Harry? Why are we in here? Where's Sirius? Where's Lupin? What's going on?"
Harry and Hermione looked at each other. "You explain," said Harry,
helping himself to some more chocolate. When Harry, Ron and Hermione left the hospital wing at noon next day, it was to find an almost deserted castle. The sweltering heat and the end of the exams meant that everyone was taking full advantage of another Hogsmeade visit. Neither Ron nor Hermione felt like going, however, so they and Harry wandered into the grounds, still talking about the extraordinary events of the previous night, and wondering where Sirius and Buckbeak were now. Sitting near the lake, watching the giant squid waving its tentacles lazily above the water, Harry lost the thread of the conversation as he looked across to the opposite bank. The stag had galloped towards him from there just last night. A shadow fell across them, and they looked up to see a very bleary-eyed Hagrid mopping his sweaty face with one of his tablecloth-sized handkerchiefs and beaming down at them.
"No, I shouldn't feel happy after what happened last night," he said. "I mean, Black escaping again and everything. But guess what?"
"What?" they said, pretending to look curious.
"Beaky! He escaped. He's free. Been celebrating all night."
"That's wonderful," said Hermione, giving Ron a reproving look, because he looked as though he was close to laughing.
"Yeah, can't have tied him up properly,"
said Hagrid, gazing happily out over the grounds.
"I was worried this morning, mind. Thought he might have met Professor Lupin in the grounds. But Lupin says he never ate anything last night."
"What?" said Harry, quickly.
"Blimey, haven't you heard?"
said Hagrid, his smile fading a little. He lowered his voice, even though there was nobody in sight.
Snape told all the Slytherins this morning. Thought everyone would know by now. Professor Lupin's a werewolf, see? And he was loose in the grounds last night. He's packing now, of course."
"He's packing?" said Harry, alarmed. "Why?"
"Leaving, isn't he?"
said Hagrid, looking surprised that Harry had to ask.
"Resigned first thing this morning. Says he can't risk it happening again."
Harry scrambled to his feet. "I'm going to see him," he said to Ron and Hermione. "But if he's resigned,
doesn't sound like there's anything we can do."
"I don't care. I still want to see him. I'll meet you back here." Lupin's office door was open. He had already packed most of his things. The Grindelow's empty tank stood next to his battered old suitcase, which was open and nearly full. Lupin was bending over something on his desk, and only looked up when Harry knocked on the door. "I saw you coming," said Lupin, smiling. He pointed to the parchment he had been poring over. It was the Marauder's map. "I just saw Hagrid," said Harry, "and he said you'd resigned. It's not true, is it?" "I'm afraid it is," said Lupin. He started opening his desk drawers and taking out the contents.
"Why?" said Harry. "The Ministry of Magic don't think you were helping Sirius, do they?"
Lupin crossed to the door and closed it behind Harry.
"No. Professor Dumbledore managed to convince Fudge that I was trying to save your lives."
He sighed.
"That was the final straw for Severus. I think the loss of the Order of Merlin hit him hard, so he accidentally let slip that I am a werewolf this morning at breakfast."
"You're not leaving just because of that," said Harry.
Lupin smiled wryly. "This time tomorrow, the owls will start arriving from parents. They will not want a werewolf teaching their children, Harry. And after last night, I see their point. I could have bitten any of you. That must never happen again."
"You're the best defence against the dark arts teacher we've ever had," said Harry. "Don't go."
Lupin shook his head and didn't speak. He carried on emptying his drawers. Then, while Harry was trying to think of a good argument to make him stay, Lupin said, "From what the headmaster told me this morning, you saved a lot of lives last night, Harry. If I'm proud of anything, it's how much you've learned. Tell me about your Patronus."
"How do you know about that?" said Harry, distracted.
"What else could have driven the Dementors back?" Harry told Lupin what had happened. When he'd finished, Lupin was smiling again. "Yes, your father was always a stag when he transformed," he said. "You guessed right. That's why we called him Prongs." Lupin threw his last few books into his case, closed the desk drawers, and turned to look at Harry. "Here, I brought this from the Shrieking Shack last night," he said, handing Harry back the invisibility cloak. "And
He hesitated, then held out the Marauder's map, too. I am no longer your teacher, so I don't feel guilty about giving you this back as well. It's no use to me, and I dare say you, Ron, and Hermione will find uses for it. Harry took the map and grinned. You told me Mooney, Wormtail, Padfoot, and Prongs would have wanted to lure me out of school. You said they'd have thought it was funny. And so we would have done, said Lupin, now reaching down to close his case. I have no hesitation in saying that James would have been highly disappointed if his son had never found any of the secret passages out of the castle. There was a knock on the door. Harry hastily stuffed the Marauder's map and the invisibility cloak into his pocket. It was Professor Dumbledore. He didn't look surprised to see Harry there. "Your carriage is at the gates, Remus," he said. "Thank you, Headmaster." Lupin picked up his old suitcase and the empty Grindelwald tank. "Well, goodbye, Harry," he said, smiling. "It's been a real pleasure teaching you. I feel sure we'll meet again some time. Headmaster, there's no need to see me to the gates. I can manage." Harry had the impression that Lupin wanted to leave as quickly as possible. "Goodbye, then, Remus," said Dumbledore soberly. Lupin shifted the Grindelwald tank slightly so that he and Dumbledore could shake hands. Then, with a final nod to Harry and a swift smile, Lupin left the office. Harry sat down in his vacated chair, staring glumly at the floor. He heard the door close and looked up. Dumbledore was still there. "Why so miserable, Harry?" he said quietly. "You should be very proud of yourself after last night." "It didn't make any difference," said Harry bitterly. "Pettigrew got away." "Didn't make any difference?" said Dumbledore quietly. "It made all the difference in the world, Harry. You helped uncover the truth. You saved an innocent man from a terrible fate." Terrible! Something stirred in Harry's memory.
"Greater and more terrible than ever before."
Professor Trelawney's prediction. "Professor Dumbledore, yesterday, when I was having my divination exam, Professor Trelawney went very, very strange."
"Indeed," said Dumbledore.
Stranger than usual, you mean?" "Yes. Her voice went all deep, and her eyes rolled, and she said Voldemort's servant was going to set out to return to him before midnight. She said the servant would help him come back to power." Harry stared up at Dumbledore. "And then she sort of became normal again, and she couldn't remember anything she'd said. Was she making a real prediction?" Dumbledore looked mildly impressed. "Do you know, Harry, I think she might have been," he said thoughtfully. "Who'd have thought it? That brings her total of real predictions up to 2. I should offer her a pay rise." But Harry looked at him, aghast. How could Dumbledore take this so calmly? "But I stopped Sirius and Professor Lupin killing Pettigrew. That makes it my fault if Voldemort comes back." "It does not," said Dumbledore quietly. "Hasn't your experience with the time-turner taught you anything, Harry? The consequences of our actions are always so complicated, so diverse, that predicting the future is a very difficult business indeed. Professor Trelawney, bless her, is living proof of that. You did a very noble thing in saving Pettigrew's life. But if he helps Voldemort back to power, Pettigrew owes his life to you. You have sent Voldemort a deputy who is in your debt. When one wizard saves another wizard's life, it creates a certain bond between them, and I'm much mistaken if Voldemort wants his servant in the debt of Harry Potter."
"I don't want a bond with Pettigrew," said Harry. "He betrayed my parents."
"This is magic at its deepest, its most impenetrable, Harry. But trust me, the time may come when you will be very glad you saved Pettigrew's life." Harry couldn't imagine when that would be. Dumbledore looked as though he knew what Harry was thinking. "I knew your father very well, both at Hogwarts and later, Harry," he said gently. "He would have saved Pettigrew too, I am sure of it." Harry looked up at him. Dumbledore wouldn't laugh. He could tell Dumbledore.
"Last night,
I thought it was my dad who'd conjured my Patronus. I mean, when I saw myself across the lake, I thought I was seeing him.
An easy mistake to make, said Dumbledore softly. I expect you're tired of hearing it, but you do look extraordinarily like James. Except for your eyes, you have your mother's eyes. Harry shook his head.
It was stupid thinking it was him, he muttered. I mean, I knew he was dead.
You think the dead we have loved ever truly leave us? You think that we don't recall them more clearly than ever in times of great trouble? Your father is alive in you, Harry, and shows himself most plainly when you have need of him. How else could you produce that particular Patronus? Prongs rode again last night.
It took a moment for Harry to realize what Dumbledore had said.
"Sirius told me all about how they became animagi last night," said Dumbledore, smiling. "An extraordinary achievement, not least keeping it quiet from me. And then I remembered the most unusual form your Patronus took when it charged Mr. Malfoy down at your Quidditch match against Ravenclaw. So you did see your father last night, Harry. You found him inside yourself."
And Dumbledore left the office, leaving Harry to his very confused thoughts. Nobody at Hogwarts knew the truth of what had happened the night that Sirius, Buckbeak, and Pettigrew had vanished, except Harry, Ron, Hermione, and Professor Dumbledore. As the end of term approached, Harry heard many different theories about what had really happened, but none of them came close to the truth. Malfoy was furious about Buckbeak. He was convinced that Hagrid had found a way of smuggling the Hippogriff to safety, and seemed outraged that he and his father had been outwitted by a gamekeeper. Percy Weasley, meanwhile, had much to say on the subject of Sirius's escape.
"If I manage to get into the Ministry, I'll have a lot of proposals to make about magical law enforcement," he told the only person who would listen, his girlfriend, Penelope. Though the weather was perfect, though the atmosphere was so cheerful, though he knew they had achieved the near impossible in helping Sirius to freedom, Harry had never approached the end of a school year in worse spirits. He certainly wasn't the only one who was sorry to see Professor Lupin go. The whole of Harry's Defence Against the Dark Arts class were miserable about his resignation.
"Wonder what they'll give us next year," said Seamus Finnegan gloomily.
"Maybe a vampire," suggested Dean Thomas, hopefully.
It wasn't only Professor Lupin's departure that was weighing on Harry's mind. He couldn't help thinking a lot about Professor Trelawney's prediction. He kept wondering where Pettigrew was now, whether he had sought sanctuary with Voldemort yet. But the thing that was lowering Harry's spirits most of all was the prospect of returning to the Dursleys. For maybe half an hour, a glorious half-hour, he had believed he would be living with Sirius from now on, his parents' best friend. It would have been the next best thing to having his own father back. And while no news of Sirius was definitely good news, because it meant he had successfully gone into hiding, Harry couldn't help feeling miserable when he thought of the home he might have had and the fact that it was now impossible. The exam results came out on the last day of term. Harry, Ron, and Hermione had passed every subject. Harry was amazed that he had got through potions. He had a shrewd suspicion that Dumbledore had stepped in to stop Snape failing him on purpose. Snape's behaviour towards Harry over the past week had been quite alarming. Harry wouldn't have thought it possible that Snape's dislike for him could increase, but it certainly had done. A muscle twitched unpleasantly at the corner of Snape's thin mouth every time he looked at Harry, and he was constantly flexing his fingers as though itching to place them around Harry's throat. Percy had got his top-grade NEWTs. Fred and George had scraped a handful of OWLs each. Gryffindor House, meanwhile, largely thanks to their spectacular performance in the Quidditch Cup, had won the House Championship for the third year running. This meant that the end-of-term feast took place amid decorations of scarlet and gold, and that the Gryffindor table was the noisiest of the lot, as everybody celebrated. Even Harry managed to forget about the journey back to the Dursleys next day, as he ate, drank, talked, and laughed with the rest. As the Hogwarts Express pulled out of the station next morning, Hermione gave Harry and Ron some surprising news.
"I went to see Professor McGonagall this morning, just before breakfast. I've decided to drop Muggle studies."
"But you passed your exam with 320%, said Ron.
"I know," sighed Hermione, "but I can't stand another year like this one. That time-turner, it was driving me mad. I've handed it in. Without Muggle studies and divination, I'll be able to have a normal timetable again."
"I still can't believe you didn't tell us about it," said Ron grumpily. "We're supposed to be your friends."
"I promised I wouldn't tell anyone," said Hermione severely. She looked around at Harry, who was watching Hogwarts disappear from view behind a mountain. 2 whole months before he'd see it again.
"Oh, cheer up, Harry," said Hermione sadly.
"I'm okay," said Harry quickly. "Just thinking about the holidays."
"Yeah, I've been thinking about them too," said Ron. "Harry, you've got to come and stay with us. I'll fix it up with Mum and Dad, then I'll call you. I know how to use a Feletone now."
"A telephone, Ron," said Hermione.
"Honestly, you should take Muggle studies next year."
Ron ignored her.
"It's the Quidditch World Cup this summer. How about it, Harry? Come and stay, and we'll go and see it. Dad can usually get tickets from work."
This proposal had the effect of cheering Harry up a great deal.
"Yeah, I bet the Dursleys would be pleased to let me come, especially after what I did to Aunt Marge."
Feeling considerably more cheerful, Harry joined Ron and Hermione in several games of Exploding Snap, and when the witch with the tea trolley arrived, he bought himself a very large lunch, though nothing with chocolate in it. But it was late in the afternoon before the thing that made him truly happy turned up.
"Harry," said Hermione suddenly, peering over his shoulder, "what's that thing outside your window?"
Harry turned to look outside. Something very small and grey was bobbing in and out of sight beyond the glass. He stood up for a better look and saw that it was a tiny owl carrying a letter which was much too big for it. The owl was so small, in fact, that it kept tumbling over in the air, buffeted this way and that in the train's slipstream. Harry quickly pulled down the window, stretched out his arm, and caught it. It felt like a very fluffy snitch. He brought it carefully inside. The owl dropped its letter onto Harry's seat and began zooming around their compartment, apparently very pleased with itself for accomplishing its task. Hedwig clicked her beak with a sort of dignified disapproval. Crookshanks sat up in his seat, following the owl with his great yellow eyes. Ron, noticing this, snatched the owl safely out of harm's way. Harry picked up the letter. It was addressed to him. He ripped open the letter and shouted, "It's from Sirius!"
"What?" said Ron and Hermione excitedly. "Read it aloud!"
"Dear Harry, I hope this finds you before you reach your aunt and uncle. I don't know whether they're used to owl post. Buckbeak and I are in hiding. I won't tell you where, in case this falls into the wrong hands. I have some doubt about the owl's reliability, but he's the best I could find, and he did seem eager for the job. I believe the Dementors are still searching for me, but they haven't a hope of finding me here. I'm planning to allow some Muggles to glimpse me soon, a long way from Hogwarts, so that the security on the castle will be lifted. There is something I never got round to telling you during our brief meeting. It was I who sent you the firebolt."
"Ha!" said Hermione triumphantly. "See? I told you it was from him."
"Yes, but he hadn't jinxed it, had he?" said Ron.
"Ouch!"
The tiny owl, now hooting happily in his hand, had nibbled one of his fingers in what it seemed to think was an affectionate way.
"Crookshanks took the order to the owl office for me. I used your name, but told them to take the gold from Gringotts Vault number 711, my own. Please consider it as 13 birthdays worth of presents from your godfather. I would also like to apologize for the fright I think I gave you that night last year when you left your uncle's house. I had only hoped to get a glimpse of you before starting my journey north, but I think the sight of me alarmed you.
I am enclosing something else for you, which I think will make your next year at Hogwarts more enjoyable. If ever you need me, send word. Your owl will find me. I'll write again soon. Sirius.
Harry looked eagerly inside the envelope. There was another piece of parchment in there. He read it through quickly, and felt suddenly as warm and contented as though he'd swallowed a bottle of hot butter beer in one go.
I, Sirius Black, Harry Potter's godfather, hereby give him permission to visit Hogsmeade at weekends.
"That'll be good enough for Dumbledore," said Harry, happily. He looked back at Sirius's letter. "Hang on, there's a P.S.
I thought your friend Ron might like to keep this owl, as it's my fault he no longer has a rat."
Ron's eyes widened. The minute owl was still hooting excitedly.
"Keep him?" he said uncertainly.
He looked closely at the owl for a moment. Then, to Harry and Hermione's great surprise, he held him out for Crookshanks to sniff.
"What do you reckon?" Ron asked the cat. "Definitely an owl?"
Crookshanks purred.
"That's good enough for me," said Ron, happily. "He's mine."
Harry read and re-read the letter from Sirius all the way back into King's Cross Station. It was still clutched tightly in his hand as he, Ron and Hermione stepped back through the barrier of Platform 9 3/4. Harry spotted Uncle Vernon at once. He was standing a good distance from Mr. and Mrs. Weasley, eyeing them suspiciously, and when Mrs. Weasley hugged Harry in greeting, his worst suspicions about them seemed confirmed.
"I'll call about the World Cup!" Ron yelled after Harry, as Harry bid him and Hermione goodbye, then wheeled the trolley, bearing his trunk and Hedwig's cage, towards Uncle Vernon, who greeted him in usual fashion.
"What's that?"
he snarled, staring at the envelope Harry was still clutching in his hand.
"If it's another form for me to sign, you've got another—"
"It's not," said Harry, cheerfully. "It's a letter from my godfather."
"Godfather?"
spluttered Uncle Vernon.
"You haven't got a godfather!"
"Yes, I have," said Harry, brightly. "He was my mum and dad's best friend. He's a convicted murderer, but he's broken out of wizard prison, and he's on the run. He likes to keep in touch with me, though, keep up with my news. Check I'm happy." And grinning broadly at the look of horror on Uncle Vernon's face, Harry set off towards the station exit, Hedwig rattling along in front of him, for what looked like a much better summer than the last. The End.